listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. This is your weekly European football podcast. With me, as always, co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Well, plenty. Another win for Monaco as they look to win Ligue 1. An absolute belter in the Derby d'Italia, which our good friend Adam Summerton commentated on. Absolutely nailed it on BT Sports. And also, you went to the Hessen Derby in the Bundesliga.
That's right, Frankfurt against Darmstadt. And I bring you a very special, messy report from that game. So lots to talk about, and there was other big stories in the Bundesliga this week. Dortmund beating Leipzig with a bit of crowd trouble as well. We want to talk about a statistic that you've spotted, which might suggest that Monaco are the best attacking team in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, well, a landmark weekend for two sides, and I was going to ask you the question, but you've given away one of the answers. Two teams have now reached 100 goals in all competitions. We're in early February. Phenomenal. Who do you think they are?
I suppose Monaco must be one. They scored so many goals. Monaco are one. Who's the other one?
It is Barcelona, which isn't that much of a surprise, I suppose. But still, February the 6th, we're recording this. 100 goals for those two clubs. And Real Madrid, whose match was called off because of some weather and then some damage to the stadium against Celta Vigo. They have 98, so they could have joined them, those two sides, but only two clubs. So Manchester City, as we've been saying since the draw, beware.
So what are those goals, best attack in Europe statistics for each league? How do they look?
Well, Monaco lead the way, Rob. Remarkably, 2.95 goals per match in Ligue 1, this is, not all competitions. Almost three a game. I mean, that's mad. Real Madrid 2.68. Napoli, after an amazing result, which we'll get onto later, scoring 7, 2.39 a game. Bayern 2.26. And then Liverpool and Arsenal averaging just over two goals per match.
So the Premier League has the lowest teams in terms of that, out of what you'd see as sort of the conventional five big leagues.
Yeah, exactly. Those aren't the six best teams, if you like. That is per league. So obviously Real Madrid are slightly ahead of Barcelona, but Barcelona would be ahead of Napoli and Bayern and Liverpool and Arsenal. In terms of the best goal scoring sides, the Premier League is the lowest of the big five, which I don't really know what that says, but the only thing it does say is that Monaco score a ridiculous amount of goals.
Yeah, it certainly does. And they got a 3-0 win over Nice at the weekend in a battle of the top two in France, which we'll talk about in a moment. Worth noting that Cameroon, if you didn't see it last night, there was obviously a lot of Super Bowl stuff going on Sunday night. Cameroon did win the African Cup of Nations with a 2-1 victory over Egypt. A fine individual winner from Vincent Aboubakar. Late on, 2 minutes to go, and Kulu had actually levelled for Cameroon after Mohamed Elneny, the Arsenal midfielder, put Egypt in front. And I suppose, Chris, Joel Matip, having announced some time ago that he didn't want to play anymore for Cameroon, I'm sure he's feeling a bit gutted not to have been involved in that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I must admit, I haven't watched a huge amount of the African Cup of Nations, but you get the picture. This is more of a team victory for Cameroon, as opposed to, you know, in the past, maybe they've had one or two outstanding players. You do wonder now for Joel Matip's point of view, don't you? I mean, he could have gone to Gabon for a month and he could be an African champion. But it was interesting that the coach was asked him about him in the post-match press conference, which I imagine he was, I don't know if he was slightly annoyed about that, because, you know, who cares what Joel Matip think? We've just come here for the last month and beaten everyone on the continent. I'm sure Matip would have to wake up this morning and think that maybe wasn't my best decision. But I don't really know the ins and outs, and there may be plenty of good reasons why I didn't want to go.
Yeah, a great performance from Cameroon, who've got this incredible record now. They've won the African Cup of Nations five times, and only Egypt, the team who they beat in the final, have won it more, with seven. And one of the players I was reading about as well, who really has apparently impressed in the tournament, is Bassagog, who is 21-year-old attacking midfielder for Cameroon, who until only 2 years ago was playing in the third tier of American football.
Yeah,
in American soccer.
Yeah, absolutely. And often in tournaments, it's when you see things written It's difficult to tell who, if there's been one single player of the tournament. Basically, every single journalist who seemed to have covered the tournament has basically said, yeah, he was the best player by a mile.
OK, Chris, let's turn our attention then to Ligue 1 and Monaco getting that 3-0 win over Nice.
Yeah.
They now dropped down to third, I think, in the Ligue 1 table. But another convincing display from Monaco.
Absolutely, and more goals for Falcao, who does seem to be fit now, consistently. A 3-0 win, very comfortable in the end for Monaco, means they're 3 points clear of Paris Saint-Germain. And you just wonder from Nice's point of view, I think it's one win in five now, after, you know, they started the season so well. They're more than that. They're 12 points ahead of Lyon in fourth. So it looks like Nice will definitely qualify for the Champions League, but they just dropped off a little in terms of a title challenge in recent weeks. And whilst it's a brilliant result for Monaco, a really damaging one for Nice.
It certainly was, and there was a soft nature about all three goals that they conceded. I saw a fair bit of the game, and all three of the Monaco goals came from the Monaco left, so the Nice right-hand side.
Yeah.
Two made by Mendy and one made by Thomas Lemar, a player we've talked a lot about on the podcast. It is 14 goals for Falcao now this season. Monaco were completely dominant from what I saw in the game. Bernardo Silva, who had missed training in the week, was fit enough to play and was very good in the first half, unfortunate not to score. That result at Paris Saint-Germain, it's been a good week for Monaco, because just last week, Chris, they got that late 1-1 draw.
Mm. Yeah, very much so. And to put it into a bit of context, Nice had lost once all season in Ligue 1 before the trip along the Côte d'Azur. They also had the best defensive record in Ligue 1 before this weekend. So that puts it into some context, as I said, about just how well Monaco are playing at the moment. And, you know, when you've scored 68 goals in 23 matches, that's a heck of a record. And, you know, they're still only 3 points clear of Paris Saint-Germain. I think this title race is going to go down to the wire, which, we mentioned this before, but for Ligue 1, that is, you know, imagine it went down
to the
last...
Yeah, it needs it, really.
It needs it. But imagine it went down to the last day of the season after all of PSG's dominance in previous years. That would be a brilliant end to the campaign.
Paris Saint-Germain got a 3-1 win over Dijon on Saturday. Apparently, it was quite an ugly performance, even though that head coach Unai Emery was insisting afterwards that it was a convincing one. Thiago Silva and Edison Cavani scoring into the second half after Lucas Moura's first half goal was cancelled out by Julio Tavares. Paris Saint-Germain now up to second.
It's a big test for Nice now, I think, having gone on this disappointing run, albeit they won their last game before losing against Monaco. But I wouldn't write them off, definitely. They're only 3 points behind. I think goals, you know, we've spoken about Balotelli earlier on in the campaign, but they've only scored 38 goals so far, which is almost two a game, which should be enough. But given they're being comfortably outscored by Paris Saint-Germain now and, of course, Monaco, interesting times. But, you know, if Nice finish in the top three, and I'm not writing them off at all, it's still a fabulous season for them. To get Champions League football would be a huge, huge for that football club.
Worth noting as well that Julian Draxler did say in the week that for two or three years he had been in discussions and in contact with Arsenal about a move there, but eventually, of course, ended up at Paris Saint-Germain. He said the Gunners did not make contact this winter.
That is so Arsenal.
I mean, given the nature of Arsenal's performance against Chelsea and, a very familiar campaign, a familiar feel to the Arsenal season.
Yeah,
they have moved to sign Draxler, would that have been the kind of player who really would have changed their season very much anyway?
No, I don't think so. I think they have a plethora of attacking midfielders. What they still need is a world-class striker, and what they still need definitely is a world-class defensive big bloke in the middle of the park, don't they? Coquelin isn't up to it in the big games. You see that time and time again. And he doesn't fancy Giroud now in the big games, even though he came off the bench. So I don't think Draxler is what Arsenal lead. I think they have a number of players in that position who are very good and probably better than Draxler, actually. So, but it's just interesting because Arsenal were linked with so many players, and then when Draxler comes out and says, "Yeah, we were in contact for a couple of transfer windows," just be decisive. If you want Draxler, get him. If you don't, then stop making contact with him for like two.
Well,
or three
I actually spoke to an Arsenal scout based in Germany. And he said that there's such a specific set of criteria for Arsenal to sign a player that it's very not hard to convince, but you generally might not recommend any players to Arsenal over the course of, you know, a season. And I think even John Cross in his book about Wenger talked about his general hesitation in the transfer market, how he'll be too concerned that it's not the right price or this kind of thing. One player that Arsene Wenger did let go, of course, was Jeremy Aliadière.
Yes.
He scored his first Ligue 1 goal in 3 years.
How they need Aliadière right now, hey?
I know. I think he'd make all the difference. He scored his first Ligue 1 goal in almost 3 years as Lorient beat Lille 1-0. He was signed last summer, his first goal since returning. So one for the Arsenal and Middlesbrough fans
to celebrate
out there. celebrate, exactly.
3 years. What's he been doing if he's a striker not scoring for 3 years?
Well, he's probably been... Well, not in Ligue 1, so where's he been? Let me Google this while you line up the Bundesliga chat. What are we going to be talking about in the Bundesliga, Chris? What do you want to chat about?
Well, as you mentioned, Bayern continued to fly, but the big game was Dortmund against RB Leipzig. Not a derby, but plenty of needle owing to Leipzig's new owners. And also Hakan Calhanoglu, who I really like as a player, one of the best set-piece specialists in European football. He's been banned for 4 months, which we'll get on to. So he's been banned for the rest of the season. A FIFA ban, which is very bad news for him and very bad news for Leverkusen too, given they are still in with a shout of finishing in the European places and in the Bundesliga and are still in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, Aliadière has been in Qatar.
Excellent.
For 2 years, so that's where he's been. Calhanoglu, it's a four-month FIFA ban. This went all the way to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which we generally hear about when things are being taken very seriously from a legal point of view. It was all to do with when he was a young player at Karlsruhe and he agreed to join Trabzonspor in Turkey and then didn't join the club and then eventually ended up at Hamburg. And it went to FIFA and everything like that. And now he, you know, Leverkusen in essence have been punished for a decision that Calhanoglu made when he was a very... very young player indeed, and he has to pay compensation to Trabzonspor. I mean, fortunately for Leverkusen, they have just signed Liam Bailey, a very exciting Jamaican forward who I think we've both seen a lot of in the Europa League this year. He looks really great.
Yeah, from Genk.
But is it unfair on Leverkusen, Chris? That's what Rudi Völler, the sporting director, said.
Maybe, but ultimately it has to be unfair on some club, doesn't it? But it's not really about the clubs, is it? It's about Calhanoglu. And if he's been found guilty, unfortunately, you know, what can you do? Because you have to punish the player and therefore you have to punish the club. I don't think, yes, it's unfair on Leverkusen, but I don't think they had any other option once they'd come to that conclusion. From Leverkusen's point of view, you've seen more than me how much will Calhanoglu be missed. I mean... Leverkusen's Champions League opponents will be delighted, and I guess their rivals in the Bundesliga as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've been, as I mentioned, I think the disappointment of the Bundesliga season for me this season. But to give an idea on Calhanoglu's impact, he scored seven and made seven.
That's huge, isn't it?
You're losing that sort of that double facet, and as you mentioned, he's one of the best set piece takers in Europe, not just scoring free kicks, but also delivering in corners that Leverkusen can score from. They were beaten by Hamburg on Friday night as well. Hamburg really struggling in the Bundesliga again this season. And it was the player on loan from Leverkusen, Papadopoulos, who scored the winner and then did a big knee slide. He was loving it. He didn't... No modest celebration. So, absolute disastrous for Leverkusen at the moment. Chicharito has been injured. They lost that game to Gladbach last week, which we talked about. And not only that, Jonathan Tah's injured now as well. Yeah. Roger Schmidt's probably under a bit of pressure, Chris.
Well, yeah, you would have thought so. But the fact that Hoffenheim and Leipzig and Hertha over the course of the season, if not right now, have been impressive, I think just adds to the pressure, doesn't it, for Schmidt in particular. It's not been great for Atletico recently, but Diego Simeone must be looking on and thinking, we've got the perfect Champions League last 16 opponents now. What looked potentially a tricky tie. They were big favourites when the draw was made. They're even bigger favourites now. to beat the Bundesliga team. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough one because that Leverkusen job with the squad on paper looks a really good one, doesn't it? Do you think he's under enough pressure maybe to go before the season comes to a close?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think if this kind of run continues, then I mean his job will be in serious risk. I've not checked the papers or anything this morning to see, you know, what they're saying about the future of Schmidt. He's had his wobbles before as Leverkusen boss. And he might be the next in a long line of coaches who have in the German top flight this season lost their job. Some results I wanted to point out. Hoffenheim beat Mainz 4-0 and they stay level on points with Dortmund, 34 points. Bayern won, Schalke won. Lewandowski put Bayern in front before an equaliser from Naldo, a free kick that Neuer perhaps should have saved. And then the Dortmund-Leipzig game, Chris. I mean, yeah. I presume you saw some of the photos doing the rounds on Twitter at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, of all the teams and fan bases who seem most upset about Leipzig, Dortmund seem to be the most. Am I right in saying they boycotted the away game early on in the season?
That's right, yeah.
And it wasn't particularly nice or tasteful. And Dortmund won the game 1-0. But, I mean, there is that, you know, Germany is extremely passionate place to go and watch football, and that's what makes it so special. But sometimes it spills over, and it definitely did at Signal Iduna Park at the weekend.
Yeah, sad. I mean, I am all for all the clubs fighting for their model of ownership. You know, I think I've said it before that, you know, people who say, oh, they should just shut up and get on with it and play the games. It's like, no, they're fighting for fan control. This is the thing we almost idolise in England. But for 28 charges to be made by Dortmund police over the weekend, you know, assault, a bodily injury, damage to property, theft. I mean, there's no excuse for that. That's just hooligans hiding behind,
yeah,
you know, a worthwhile cause. Dortmund got a 1-0 win. Aubameyang with the only goal of the game after it was brilliantly made by Ousmane Dembele, who really is living up to the hype at Dortmund. I commentated on Gladbach beating Freiburg 3-0. Lars Stindl on the score sheet again, and that's 7 points from a possible 9 for Dieter Hecking, Chris. He might be turning it around.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, he had that spell at Wolfsburg, didn't he? Vastly experienced. I saw him when we were over in Marbella, absolutely shrieking at his players, having had that, you know. And we mentioned it, didn't we, in that podcast? But for Hecking to have had 2 weeks in the sun, no surprise then that when they get back, a new manager makes that sort of impact, I don't think, because they have got very good players. They were underperforming under Schubert, but he hasn't had to come in and, you know, mix matches with training. He had that time and he's hit the ground running.
Well, this is the problem that Leverkusen have got. Do you sack Schmidt now?
Yeah,
when you've just given him the mid-season break. And what, there was a nice story as well. Patrick Herrmann, who's had numerous injuries over the past couple of years, German international winger, came on after 3 months out, his latest spell, and scored immediately down at the Nordkurve end and was in tears with his celebration and all his teammates off the bench all came to congratulate him. So really nice story from there. But on Sunday, I headed down to Frankfurt for the Hessen Derby, where there was a bit of crowd trouble last year. So I was really interested to see the dynamic between Frankfurt and Darmstadt fans. So here's what happened on my Sunday trip to the Commerzbank Arena.
This is Football in Europe, Match Day Road Trip.
So I'm in the centre of Frankfurt, just arrived on the train from Cologne this morning, only an hour across to Frankfurt, and it's already been an interesting few minutes ahead of the derby. The train actually went past the stadium, and I haven't seen that many police at a game in a long time. So I'm just going to make my way up now on the tram from the central station, the Hauptbahnhof in Frankfurt. I had a little wander into the centre of the city as well, and it was interesting because there was a big group of Frankfurt fans, probably about 300 or 400 ultras, I'd guess, and in unison, they just marched down the middle of the road to make their way towards the stadium. All the cars effectively had to stop and get out of the way for them. So quite an interesting sight, to be honest. So I decided to try and take a photo because it just looked amazing. Just seeing 400 guys in unison just march down the middle of the street. And then a couple of ultras almost snapped my phone out of my hand. So my I've learned my lesson not to muck about today, because it's going to be a feisty one. Also, just a few seconds ago, something like 15 police vans went past with their sirens. So I'm sure it's going to be an intense atmosphere today. I was talking to a Frankfurt fan on the train down. He says it's going to be a very special atmosphere today. Frankfurt and Darmstadt was a derby that hadn't been played in the Bundesliga for roughly 33, 34 years prior to last season. So, you know, both sets of fans are very up for the fixture. And you can just hear my tram rolling in now to the Commerzbank Arena, the Stadion, as it says on the front of the tram. So I'm going to jump on and head my way down. What's your names, guys?
Pierre.
Ricarda.
This is my first time to the Commerzbank Arena. Can you give me an idea of the atmosphere and the volume that I'm going to hear today?
Very loud in Commerzbank Arena.
I hope it will be amazing. We expect a lot of noise, a lot of fun, and a good game, yes.
The biggest game in Hessen Derby for Frankfurt is Frankfurt-Offenbach.
Is it more important for the Darmstadt supporters than to derby?
Yeah.
Why have Frankfurt been so good this season?
I think...
Niko Kovac.
That's the main reason,
factor.
Yeah.
What's he done?
A very good job.
By unknown player, and he made it through superstars.
Because last year came very close to relegation.
Yeah. The team was not so good last year. We had a long time in the season, the wrong trainer. Then Niko came for 10 games or for end of season, and he made it very, very good. I think Darmstadt lost the last game 6-1 home versus Cologne. And this time Darmstadt lose 2-1.
2-1. Yeah. That's modest. What do you think?
3-0 for Frankfurt, yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about Alex Meyer?
Football god.
The football god?
Yeah. Football god.
He's getting older, though.
Yeah, he's getting old. But he's a very special...
He's very friendly.
Really a friendly, very special player.
Very grounded.
So we're up and running in the Essen derby between Frankfurt and Darmstadt. The fans who are clad in blue at the moment with a sign, a banner that says Südessen, South Essen, the part of the area that Darmstadt are from. The Frankfurt fans, meanwhile, in the northwest end where the hardcore fans sit, are all wearing sort of waterproof covers, if you like, with the number 12 on it, is in the 12th man, and they will sing their hearts out, I'm sure, for the remainder of the afternoon into the evening here in the derby. The atmosphere is quite special. Frankfurt have a penalty,
which they've scored through Hasebe.
Football in Europe account on Audio Boom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
It didn't finish 1-0 at the Commerzbank Arena. It finished 2-0 in the end to Frankfurt because Ante Rebic scored late on after a goal brilliantly made by Alex Meyer, who we talked about with the Frankfurt fans in that feature. I did record a bit of audio at the end, but I was so out of breath because I was running for a taxi to make my plane. Chris, it was horrible to listen to.
Oh, you should have put that in.
No, I just couldn't do it to the listeners, especially if you've got headphones in. It's unsettling. But a big
Rob
result for Frankfurt.
Having a heart attack.
Yeah, I'm so unfit. Frankfurt still in the hunt for Champions League football. An incredible turnaround after they were nearly relegated last season. Chris. Let's talk about... Oh, we forgot a game in France.
I've just realised.
Saint-Étienne-Lyon.
Yeah, another derby. Well, no, we didn't forget. We just thought we'd have a derby part of the show.
Oh, so yeah.
The Rhone Derby, which is one of the best in Europe. Saint-Étienne beating Lyon at home 2-0. The celebrations and the atmosphere, we know the Stade Geoffroy Guichard is it's called the Cauldron. It's one of the best places to watch football in Europe. United are going to experience that in the Europa League in a few weeks' time. They won 2-0, and afterwards the atmosphere was just brilliant. They did, that so many teams do the tra-la-la-la-la-la-la, Saint-Étienne. It was awesome. All the players are at the front dancing in front of the fans. Great win. And Memphis Depay started, and he got L'Équipe, famously hard and harsh with their player ratings. He got a 2. Not great.
Oh, dear. Poor old Memphis. I remember seeing Yanga and Biwa get a 1.
That was great. You would have thought it's a bit like when you did an exam. If you write your name on it, you probably get an E or something. So that's basically all he got. He walked onto the pitch. There's a 1. That's all.
I'm sure it'll happen for Memphis Depay eventually. He's just gone there, of course, and I'm sure it's going to work out for him, that move to Lyon, personally. Chris, quick one in Portugal before we talk about Italy. Iker Casillas with some heroics.
Yeah, a magnificent save in the 92nd minute of 93. Do you remember Seaman's save in the FA Cup semi-final when it was sort of behind him?
Was that Pesca Salido?
Yeah,
who had the header
for Sheffield United. Yeah, great. You wouldn't think Paul Pescasilido would have come up on this week's football.
I knew it would happen eventually.
it wasn't quite as good as that save, but he sort of had to reach further to his right-hand side. It was slightly behind him, clawed it out. Jorge Jesus, who's always a pitcher on the touchline, he was like shocked. How's he done that? Porto won the game 2-1 because of the save. So they remain a point behind Benfica. Sporting, their title challenge is over, because they're now 10 points behind Benfica. But it was a great moment for Casillas, who's coming up against Buffon in the Champions League. Those two of the greatest goalkeepers ever to have played the game. And just showing that Iker Casillas has still got it.
He certainly does. OK, well, you mentioned Buffon there, Chris. It was the Derby d'Italia at the weekend. Juventus, having lost to Inter earlier on in the league campaign, got their revenge with a 1-0 victory. And it was a rather special goal from a man deemed surplus to requirements at Stamford Bridge still, who got it.
Yeah, Juan Cuadrado, who hadn't scored a Serie A goal, got that brilliant goal against Lyon in the Champions League. This one was similarly similarly individual. Corner headed out to him, and he just first time, just one of those that when you hit it, you think, yeah, that's in. Absolutely rocketed into the back of the net. It was brilliant. Adam Summerton absolutely nailed it on commentary, said it was a special goal in a special game, and it was. Inter were pretty good, 5 points off the Champions League places. It was one of those that you lose the game and it hurts for a couple of days, but probably when they look back at it, they'll think, you know what, we went to Turin and we were very competitive, but a great win for Juve to restore a 6-point lead, because Napoli, earlier on this weekend, Rob, they hit 7 away at Bologna.
So is Milik back? Did he play any part in this?
Didn't play a part, was back on the bench, and probably looked on in wonder, because Marek Hamšík got his first career hat-trick. Dries Mertens got another hat-trick. He has been absolutely brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Recently. There were 2 red cards, Callejon and Messina, so it finished 10 apiece. It was a great game. Napoli's biggest ever away win, 7-1. And we talked about beware Manchester City for Monaco. Real Madrid are going to have to be at their best against Napoli when the Champions League resumes.
So if Milik's fit, are they still going to play Dries Mertens as their centre-forward, even though he's not a centre-forward? I mean,
Maurizio Sarri is going to have some decisions, isn't he? I wonder whether Milik might start the first leg on the bench. An option. It's very difficult, isn't it? Just to put a bit of context, Bologna had conceded 7 goals in 10 home games before Napoli hit them for 7.
And then they conceded 7 in 90 minutes. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so a shine that they're scoring when, like, in not easy situations. I mean, you can't compare Real Madrid to Bologna, but okay, very interesting. Wasn't there another side who hit big at the weekend in Italy?
Yeah, Lazio. They probably would have got the headlines away from home as well. They scored six and Marco Pirollo got four of them. Magnificent. I mean, Pescara have been awful, awful recently.
So this one finished 6-2 as well.
6-2. So two games with nine goals. So much for Serie A being defensive. It was 2-2 at one stage. Lazio winning 6-2. And they're very much in the hunt for that final Champions League place. So you would imagine that Juve... Well, you think it would be Juve, Napoli and Roma, but Lazio are not too far behind Roma as they look to get back in the Champions League, having finished in the top three a couple of years ago and then lost in the playoffs, which all Serie A sides seem to do. But yeah, I mean, baffling weekend to have a team scoring seven and a team scoring six away from home.
Okay, other messages we've had in on Twitter, it's at FIE Podcast. Stuart Overton says Cuadrado's strike against Inter was one of the highlights of his weekend. Also, Eibar beating Valencia 4-0 at the Mestalla. That was his highlight of the weekend. A remarkable story. La Liga Gav has pointed out that Paco Alcácer has scored his first league goal for Barcelona. Well, let's switch it up to Spain, Chris. Alcácer was on the score sheet in a 3-0 win over Athletic Club. And a familiar name on the score sheet in that game as well.
Alex Vidal. Lionel Messi scored as well. It was 3-0. Barca taking advantage because Real Madrid's match was called off at Celta Vigo. Real Betis' game was called off at Deportivo 2 in the north.
What was the deal with that? Why was that?
Terrible weather and stadium damage because of it. Onto the table quickly. Barcelona, because of that win, are a point behind Real Madrid, but... Madrid now have two matches in hand. But there was a very interesting piece in Marca that I read about. Yes, you can't do much about terrible weather, but the general state of stadiums, which they say serious decline in Spain. You think San Mames is new. Espanyol and Las Palmas have new grounds. But beyond that, a lot of them haven't been updated for quite a long time, including... Deportivo and Celta Vigo when those two games were called off at the weekend. And you look at some of the other countries, basically every other major nation has hosted a football championship since Spain. I think 82 World Cup was the last one, which is a very long time, isn't it?
It is a long time, yeah.
Given Spain's one of the great footballing nations.
Well, I saw some of the plans that Barcelona have. There was developments over the weekend. Can't quite remember exactly if their plans to make, you know, the new camp even bigger and modernise it. I mean, for people who've been, there's sort of a dated element about some of the inside of it. Certainly, you know, it doesn't look like one of your modern football stadiums.
No, and in many ways that creates great atmospheres, like when the Mestalla or the Ramon Sessuén Pizjuan at Sevilla. They're brilliant atmospheric grounds. The Calderon. You know, Atletico are moving to a new stadium next season. You know, you watch games there and you listen and you think, God, the atmosphere is brilliant. It's that, you know, as a football fan, that's sort of all I'm bothered about. I don't really care whether it's comfortable. But Spanish stadiums do increasingly look old compared to, maybe not Italian stadiums, Juventus aside, but... Certainly compared to now all of the stadiums in France and Germany and even now Russia, where they're going to have the World Cup. You know, it's interesting. You wonder how much money there is in Spain to build these new grounds. So it's just it was interesting in a weekend. It was a good article in Marca just to, you know.
OK, we'll put that on the Twitter page.
Yeah, absolutely. Off the back of these games being called off, what it means. But certainly for Madrid... A weekend when they had their feet up ultimately and watched on as Barcelona won. Sevilla were held by Villarreal. Nasri missed a penalty in that game, damaging that really for Sevilla. Atletico winners over Leganes, although they do remain 7 points behind Madrid, Atletico, and they've played two games more. You can't really see Simeone's side winning the title.
I think we're done and dusted for this week's podcast.
We are. Maybe just a quick reminder. There's a lot of midweek European games.
So, give it to me.
I'm just going to have to go through the fixture list. But there's,
have it ready.
What do you mean, have it ready? This is the great thing about this podcast. You know, we just, you know, we ad-lib all the time. Tuesday, Roma against Fiorentina. Wednesday, Crotone Juve and Bologna against Milan. And there's a whole host of matches in France. So we'll be updating two fixtures come next Monday when the Champions League returns.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, Rob.
Yes, and we'll probably do a big look ahead to the round of 16, won't we, next week?
Yeah, and the Europa League and things. Because of the way that it's now split up, 4 of the next 5 weeks, starting from next week, are Champions League weeks.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. If you do enjoy football in Europe, please leave us a review on iTunes and tweet us. It's at FIE Podcast.
Yeah, and hopefully I won't have this sore throat and cold by the time we speak next Monday.
You always seem to have a cold or something. What's up with you?
I know. I don't know. I'm turning into one of those people who always has a cold. Going to have to do something. I'm going to have to buy some Yakult.
Yeah, get some Yakult, get some First Defence.
You love that First Defence. Is it?
I know.
It
I don't want to endorse it like it's sponsoring the podcast, but yeah, that's really good. You feel the cold coming on? This does sound like an advert. They're not paying us. But First Defence is a fine product.
How do you take it?
Nasal. It's a nasal thing. Yeah.
Is it?
It's a grim thing to do in public. You have to...
Yeah, you can't be one of those people on the train doing it. What are you
No. No. It's horrible. Look, this really has unravelled. We'll see you... see you next Monday, Chris.
Yep, see you next Monday. Bye.
This is Football in Europe.